You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Pub, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to OneOfUs.net and don't forget your towel.
And welcome back to the Tattoo Shop Podcast on OneOfUs.net. I am your host, JC DeLeon. As always, with me is my co-host, Michael Williams.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
Yeah, that was a pretty awkward beginning, but we're going to leave it. Because that's what I do. As with every episode, we have a special guest with us. We've got Stacey Martin Smith.
Hello.
And she is out of Golden Age Tattoo here in Austin. And we've got a couple things we're going to talk about. We're going to delve into, Stacey may not be as familiar with it, but I think Michael and I are going to talk a little bit about what we're going to be doing later this month, going to Fantastic Fest. We'll preview that a little bit. We've got a couple of news stories. But as always, since we have a new guest, I kind of want to pick her brain a little bit about where she got started and all that. And so that's where we begin. Yeah, how did you kind of get involved with tattooing?
Well, I had been doing a lot of graphic design and just artwork, either freelance or working for print shops and stuff like that. And I was living in central New York, which is not amazing for art and culture or anything like that. But I had just moved back there from New York City, and I was really kind of hungry to do something a little bit more creative with my artwork. And I had some friends suggest that I look into tattooing, and I knew nothing. I'd been in a tattoo shop in college once, where I walked in and a friend got a piercing and I walked pretty much right back out. That was Halo Tattoo in Syracuse, New York.
So how old were you when you got your first tattoo?
I was 23.
23.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So
is this the getting the tattoo to kind of get to know and maybe get an apprenticeship?
Yeah, I started, I went into the shop and just, you know, I expressed that I was interested in it, but I still wasn't sure and I wanted to know more, and they needed help at the shop. So I was like, hey, I'll kind of do counter work and stuff for you and run for you, basically just as a gopher at first, not even really knowing that that was going to be a huge part of the apprenticeship. But I just willingly wanted to do it and hang out at the shop and get a feel for everything and see if it was even something I'd be interested in doing. So I started doing that, like, as soon as I was done with my regular job, I'd go over to the shop, I'd grab the guy's lunch, hang out, basically do typesetting on the computer for him if they needed any fonts or anything for any pieces, and just had it going for a while, got tattooed a few times, especially when people were just sitting around if they were bored, and I guess between tattoos or if it was a slow day, because it was a pretty big walk in town, like where I grew up. I mean, people really weren't into getting like big custom pieces yet. There were maybe like a few people with a lot of coverage in that town, like body coverage. Everyone else was like the little ones where you're still counting how many you have and stuff. So,
because I'd imagine part of it is also the college in the area. So a lot of walk-ins that way, or?
Not so much. I mean, it was people like, it was kind of like they'd get their paychecks and they'd be bored and they'd go to the shop and they pick some flash.
And what year is this?
This is like 2003.
Yeah,
I think.
See, this is like the good time, like before like all the TV shows, before. Getting big custom pieces that had like a lot of meaning. Like there was still flash on the walls. People would come in and pick out like a cool design, get it tattooed. Yeah, that's fun.
It was great, but I really wanted to draw custom stuff because I knew I could. But you know, I did the flash or I'd tweak stuff. You know, people wanted something a little bit different. I draw for the guys.
So you're helping them like design the tattoos and stuff. And at this point, are you an apprentice or are you just hanging out?
It was kind of fuzzy for a while.
Fuzzy?
Yeah, but I think probably like towards, I'd say maybe like 5 or 6 months down the road after getting like 3 tattoos, I was like, okay, can I do this? And they were like, okay, this is what you need to buy. This is how often you need to be here. And I had enough money saved to quit my job and actually be at the shop for most of the day, starting early and everything. And I would do everything. I painted all their signage with One Shot for the front of the building when they moved their shop and everything. I would just do everything. I cleaned all the tubes.
You were like a golden goose apprentice.
I kind of, in a weird way, I was. And
she knows how to work the computer.
Yeah. I mean, my one buddy, Ben, that I worked at a different shop after my apprenticeship was, they'd call me like 21st century digital girl because it was just like everything they needed. They needed the consent forms printed or designed. They needed business cards. They needed whatever. I would do it. The aftercare sheets. And it would be like super slick.
Do you find most apprentices like just kind of want to like get started right away? Is that kind of why she's...
Yeah, you know, I mean, to me it seems like, especially like nowadays, I mean, people are like looking for apprentices, and it seems like more and more shops are looking for apprentices, not so much to find this amazing person who has like a ton of skill to teach, but more so like, we need somebody here to like clean and like,
yeah.
You know, do all like, yeah. Like at our shop, we're in the process of like hiring a counter person.
Yeah, I saw
like,
that.
You know, we've gone from having somebody who comes in and does like the tubes and the cleaning of the shop and all that kind of stuff to, you know, now we're also busy, we're looking into getting somebody who's being paid not to be an apprentice, who doesn't, you know, isn't going to learn how to tattoo, but just answer the phones, do the paperwork, keep the shop straightened, you know.
Yeah.
Basically everything, like all the grunt work of being an apprentice.
Right.
So, but yeah, more and more it seems like people are just kind of doing that, and just goes so quick, you know. A few months in, they start doing tattoos, and then immediately it's like, I'm not an apprentice anymore, I'm a tattooer, I've done tattoos, and it just, you know, they get fired or just put out on the floor to tattoo, and then they find somebody else to, like, you know, fill the spot of cleaning the shop and doing all the grunt work.
What was it like for you when, I guess, you started your apprenticeship to, like, when you were sort of on your own? Or, like, about how long did that process take?
The apprenticeship?
Yeah.
It's a funny story because I didn't stay an apprentice at that shop for very long. It was the guy that ran the shop was not at all as experienced as he claimed he was. And, you know, I think 3 or 4 of us were totally fooled by this guy. He had not a lot of experience. So we basically all quit on the same day.
Mm.
And we all went to different shops to start work. And I started working at Apocalypse Tattoo in Utica, New York, and met Mike Davidson. He was the owner and operator of that shop. And he's a maniac, and he's awesome. And he taught me everything else that I needed to know about tattooing. I think he could tell. And by that time, I think the shows were on.
The show had begun.
And I think he knew because, I mean, there was no tattoo community. It was 2 tattoo shops that kept each other in check. And people would bounce from one to the other price checking. And that was it. And they kind of kept anyone else from opening up a shop from happening. Through, you know, practices, we won't have to get into details, but it was just those 2 shops, and they were on different sides of town and everything, and yeah, it was a lot of fun, and it was terrifying at times, but I learned business-wise what to and to not do, and yeah, it was pretty rad. I was super busy.
What's one of the most difficult skills to, like, master? Like, I'd imagine if you... Because it didn't seem like something you thought about doing, like, ever since you were super young. And so I guess when you're sort of jumping into it, like, I guess just the actual aspect of, like, maybe how deep to go into the skin or, like, what sort of things.
Yeah, like, and honestly, like, even still, even, you know, I think after 12 years, like, when you get a different piece of equipment to use or, like, different needles to use, like, all of those variables change all the time. I think I'm able to adapt quicker now than I was when I first started. I think it was funny and I'm glad for this, but my needle depth, like everything just was so light that I did when I first started. I was afraid. I was seriously like terrified to tattoo people. And it wasn't necessarily the hurting thing. I was like, I'm doing this on you and it's permanent. Like that's terrifying to an artist that's used to being able to either hit Control Alt Z or erase or crumple it up and start a new sheet of paper. So I think that was the hardest part.
Wasn't it just, like, the most, like, exciting and stressful, like, thing ever?
Heartbeat, sweating, like, tiniest tattoos would take me, like, an hour to do. Like, everything would fall down, and I'd spill stuff. I still kind of do that, but...
Did you do your first tattoo on yourself or on somebody else?
It's on me. I have two on me.
Isn't that great?
You're looking right at it.
Oh, this lady right here. Yeah. See, we always tend to, like, tattoo, like, somewhere on her leg.
Yeah, and, it's funny, because I think... You know, one of the first things that was bugging me about it, well, finding the stencil line in comparison to where my needle was probably the hardest thing. And that's what I learned the hard way with all of these.
Yeah.
And it's blurry now, but she looked like she was giving you the finger with her toe, or the middle finger with her bottom toe, but... Even worse than that, I feel like she's facing the wrong way. So, like, I got all of these things out of the way myself.
I think she's facing the right way.
It's a toss-up.
I think it's like an eagle that's body's going one way, but its head's kind of twisted the other. Like, her body's kind of going backwards, but her head's looking forward.
Well, you're being very kind right now. It's
much better looking than my first tattoo I did on myself, so...
Yeah. Well, this is how you start. I don't get how I've met a lot of apprentices that have never even done this, and I'm like...
How have you not tattooed yourself for your first tattoo? Like, I thought you had to.
And I think some of the excuses were, too, well, I don't want to mess it up, or I don't want it to be messed up, or, like, and yeah. I'm like, dude, you're, like, going to town on real humans that are potential clients, and you're concerned about, you know, your own project. Like, you... Yeah. Throw caution to the wind.
I will never forget, like, that night doing the first tattoo on myself, like, just this, like, rush, like, so, like, excited and happy, and, like, I'm in pain, and I'm hurting myself, and I'm trying not to move, mm-hmm. but I'm trying to do this awesome tattoo, and, like, I'm, like, just cheesing it, like, face just grinning so big, and I get done, and I'm just, like, on, like, this natural high for, like, the rest of, like, the day.
Yeah.
It was exciting. And then I did it. You know, a tattoo to somebody else, and it was just about as good. Mm-hmm. The excitement, not the tattoo. The tattoo was terrible,
but the feeling.
Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah, you know? it's a good feeling to know that you're, like you said, stress. It's permanent. Somebody's gonna have it forever. But yeah. In the end, when you get done with that tattoo, and somebody's super excited about it,
that's a pretty great feeling.
Yeah, just knowing that. I don't know about you, but like I remember, pretty much most all the tattoos I got. And who did them, and the experience with it. Like,
sure.
Something crazy stands out about, like, each, like, little, like, session. Like, one weird thing that just always comes to memory. And it could be, like, a song that triggers it or something. Mm-hmm. And I just know that there's a lot of people out there that share that with me. Which is kind of crazy.
It is weird.
I share it with you.
Yeah. That's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
JC, do you remember?
Yeah. I mean, I can remember just kind of, like, when you did this line on me, because that one took so long. I think... In that room, there was two or three other people getting tattooed at the same time, and then just all the conversations going back and forth, and like it's, yeah, like I can kind of remember everything happening in really each tattoo I've gotten.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you mentioned the start of the shows and sort of creating the community. One of the things I've done in between the last episode we recorded and this one, I didn't even really mean to do it on purpose. It just kind of sort of, in the summertime, all the TV shows are on hiatus, so I always pick a TV show to, like, catch up on. And I started watching one episode of Ink Master, because I'd never seen it before. And I was just like, oh, this is pretty cool. And I started by jumping around, because I would see the name of the episode and be like, oh, this episode, they're tattooing people's asses. Like, that seems interesting. and then eventually I was just like, you know what, screw it, I'm going to start from the beginning. It sort of opened my eyes up to the world of tattooing, especially from the artist's point of view, because that's pretty much all that the show is from. And I was curious, like, if you guys were on the show, like, how would you kind of approach it? Or is it, like, giving a different style that you're not used to? Or is it... And you could say you wouldn't be interested in it at all. Like, you can be honest about the show.
I don't think I'd bode well in a situation like that. It's not... Anything with a... It's not like a personality thing. I can't do... You know, I...
The tension between artists, it does kind of seem like a little much. Like, going into it, one of the things that I was most surprised by, and only knowing Michael, like, for the most part, all artists are friends. Like, they hang out with each other. They know each other from different shops. They go to conventions. Like, there's no real reason for them to be at each other's throats the way they are in the show.
$100,000.
Yeah, you put money and time, like, time constraints and like, not knowing, you know, like, being given, like, these assignments that are probably outside of your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Because not everyone's an ink master, you know? And just, I don't know, and I'm sure there's, like, lack of sleep and stuff. These can't be great conditions. Like, I kind of like to try to take care of myself and my clients, and I just don't feel like you can do that while doing a show like that. And again, it brings me back to things being permanent.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that to somebody. I just couldn't do it. Whether it came out good or not, it would seriously still just be a crapshoot for me, personally. I can't.
It is kind of, because I texted you one day, I was like, you know, I wouldn't mind applying and being a canvas on the show, despite the fact that there's like a 35% chance I'd end up with a terrible tattoo, and you're like, it is probably like better than 50% chance you'll end up with a terrible tattoo.
I mean, I will say this, like, I've watched every season, every episode, I enjoy it, you know, I find entertainment in it, there's a lot of it that I relate to that I think is completely accurate, and there's some of it that is definitely blown out of proportions, but you know, they've definitely gone from having some, like, more terrible artists to having, like, less terrible artists. And they have some people on there that are phenomenal. But I just remember the first season, I can't remember the guy's name, but he's like, I'm a truck driver / part-time tattoo artist.
Yeah.
And I was like, why the fuck is this guy an Ink Master? And sure enough, like, you know, you see the first tattoo he does on somebody. And I get it. You know, it's first season. Like, everybody thinks they're going on the show to, like, get tattooed by, you know, the Ink Masters. Like, the best of the best in the world competing. But by, like, season 7, like, you better know, like, you're going on there, and there's going to be some bad ones, and you might get a bad one. You might have somebody who's having a bad day. You might push them and, like, get them upset. Somebody else that they're on the show with might get them upset, and you might get a tattoo that's not perfect. You might get a tattoo that's messed up, or you might get something that's, like, mind-blowing phenomenal.
Yeah.
But you have to know that, and people seem so surprised when they get, like, the bad one. Like, ugh. I thought you were, like, the best.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it would be such a bummer if I did get something that I wouldn't like. But, I mean, for the experience of it, I think it'd be kind of cool. But, it's definitely... Definitely seems like a crapshoot.
Yeah. Entertaining, though. I highly recommend everybody watches it.
I do like it a lot. I don't really watch reality TV, but I do think... I mean, the tension between the artists is probably real just because of the prize at the end. But, I mean, sometimes it is a little much, and I could see how, it would get to an artist if they're not really that sort of, they're not used to that sort of pressure. Yeah.
I won't stick around on that. I can talk about that all night.
We totally could.
All right, so moving on, I wanted to get you guys' thoughts on a couple of news stories that I came across. One, this story came across to me on Facebook because it was shared, as things tend to do. And I know that, like I mentioned before, artists sort of know each other from different shops and things like that. And that's how this was spread to me, by different people spreading it around. Basically, a guy in Denver walked out on an $1,100 tattoo, and so different shops were passing this guy's photo around, basically saying, you know, don't tattoo this guy ever. I don't know if he ever got caught or not, but, I mean, A, has anything like that ever happened to you guys, or seen anything like that happen, and is our shop sort of unified in that way, sort of city-wise, or... I mean, if something like that were to happen in Austin, do you imagine it would sort of unfold the same way?
I think so. I think people would give the heads up.
Yeah.
I think in general, I mean, whether we like know or get along with like everybody in town, I think there's a lot of people that people know and get along with as tattooers, and you probably know somebody that knows somebody that you haven't met yet that's cool. So I definitely think that, yeah, if something happened like that to one of us, it would get shared quick. I mean, that is definitely a positive side to social media, you know, at least in tattooing.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, I remember when I first started tattooing, you would always quote prices, you know, people come in for flash, and in general, you had done the design before, and you kind of know, like, what kind of work goes into it, and easy to kind of, like, guess how long it's going to take to do, because, you know, they typically weren't real big, you know, something baseball size, softball size, and you would kind of quote the price, and, you know, get them to pay up front, and then do the tattoo. And I feel like over time, like as it's become more complicated, you're doing more custom tattoos and, you know, people are getting them in difficult places. You know, it's just hard to do that. So in general, I put a lot of trust in the person and, you know, they kind of trust me. And we kind of just do the tattoo and see how long it takes and try to charge them fairly for the work I put into doing the tattoo to make it look as good as it can. So I would hope that one day I wouldn't get done tattooing somebody and they, you know, tell me they're going to go grab their wallet and leave. That would be terrible. You know?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like the sort of scenario where, I mean, I'd imagine if you were going to have someone tattoo something on you that costs that much, there's bound to have been some kind of rapport established over a while. Like, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's a dick move, obviously, but I also don't see how, I guess, the artist would have let that happen, maybe.
And I mean, you know, not to, like, put any doubt in it, but, I mean, I am kind of curious. Like, I don't know the artist. I don't know the guy doing the tattoo. I don't know the situation that day. Like, you know, I'm sure there's another side of the story, and I'd be interested to hear that. But, you know, the side that we've heard has been shared, and I imagine that guy's going to have a hard time, like, getting tattooed again, at least in that area.
Yeah. Have you ever seen anything like that? Or is...
I mean, I guess I've heard stories about people getting stood up, but... Going back to the Mike Davidson there, the guy that taught me, I remember, like, the way he had the shop set up. I mean, if you're paying via credit card, you paid first. Yeah. And if you had to go get cash, you weren't allowed. I mean, there had to be some kind of collateral left behind, whether it be a human being.
You could leave your friend.
Your entire, you know, your license or whatever, but yeah, that stuff was taken care of. But like,
I do remember the awkward people getting left behind. Like they're like sitting on the couch like 10 minutes. Like I hope my friend comes back with that money.
They'll send their friend to go get the money. You know,
you get the one guy at the shop start making jokes like we're gonna sell this person on the black market if they don't come back.
It usually just works out, and I never like I don't let anybody out of the shop when they're like, hey, if you prefer cash, I can go get cash. I'm like, nope, I take credit cards too. I don't usually let anybody leave the shop without paying. And we figure something out. If like a card's declined, I'm like, do you have PayPal? Yes? Okay, let's try that. You know? But I could see that happening more so getting into like the bigger custom tattoos because it's like, you know, there's just more of an opportunity to do that because you're not, like, really quoting. Sometimes if it's a brand new client, you don't know the person. We do put a lot of faith in people.
Yeah.
I mean, they're putting just as much faith in us. So,
exactly,
I mean, I guess
we're
even. The universe is balanced.
it's a team effort.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't seem to me like the kind of thing that would happen all that often, which is probably why it made news in general. So the other thing, I came across this story in, I forgot what country, but basically a 3D printing, this is a different one, a 3D printing robot was basically engineered to give tattoos. I basically imagine the process is more of just putting a gun on the printing part, and it's the video is pretty interesting. There's a human being in there getting tattooed by this robot, and he's strapped in pretty good, which I guess would nullify any movement.
Forget, did they have pictures of the end product?
They didn't. They just had the video.
Of course not! Of course not!
It's just a Vimeo video, and I guess, yeah, these guys are controlling it kind of remotely, but I mean, yeah, I'd imagine there's a whole quagmire of problems with that sort of thing, like if the guy moves, or, yeah, what's...
Yeah, like, moves, passes out, like... Who knows? All kinds of things. Like, what do? You have to, like, pee? You have to, like, stop the machine? Have to, like, get unstrapped, get up, go pee, lay down in the same exact spot?
Yeah.
Strap back in? Like, how does that pick right back up? I mean...
Is the machine on autopilot, or did you say somebody's controlling it?
I think somebody's controlling it. Yeah.
I don't think somebody controls it. I think somebody writes a program.
Yeah.
And I think the computer is has some kind of sensor that's, like, sensing how close it is to the skin and, like, where it's at. But, they wrote, like, a program for it. Like, I mean, there's definitely... It's not Skynet.
Yeah. And it seems like the sort of thing, I guess maybe a shop would have to charge more for the process of it. But, I mean, if that being the case, I'd much rather pay less, but also have the reliability of a human being and human judgment placing something on my body.
I guess I kind of look at it the same way I look at a lot of stuff. Like, when I go to a store, I try to avoid, like, self-checkout.
Right.
Like, I want to go interact with somebody who works at the store, you know, have them ask me how I'm doing, say I'm doing well, ask them how they're doing, you know, have that kind of interaction. Like, you know, somebody has a job, like, who knows? Like, I mean, the person today, I took a Xbox controller back and exchanged it, and while we were waiting on somebody to bring it up, like, just in there shooting the shit with the employee, and I don't know, they cheered up my day. I imagine, like, it was good for them, because they probably deal with a bunch of people who were a lot less friendly than me. I mean, I hope not, but chances are they probably did. So I like that, and I think with, like, tattooing, it should be the same way. I mean, if robots do the tattooing, like, who are the people going to talk to?
Right.
I mean, they just bring their friends, I guess.
Who's
going to
tattoo the robots, though?
Who's going to tattoo the robots? Does your robot have tattoos? I'm not going to get tattooed by a robot without tattoos.
Right. I mean, that's just how would they have the experience? How would they know?
That's an important thing, too, is being able to talk to someone. Sometimes, I guess, depending on the spot, like, the one tattoo I have on my calf, it was painful enough to where the guy was trying to talk to me, but I was like, no, man, I need to zone out. And I only had one, this was in, like, 2006 or 7, and so digital video wasn't as prevalent as it is now, so, like, I had one video on my phone, and it was The Assassination of Jesse James, and it's not a very good movie to watch while you're getting tattooed. Like, you need to watch something more action-packed.
You're like, this is a lot of story. I'm having a hard time focusing on this.
Yeah, but the rationale was, I really like this movie, and it's really long, so the length of this movie should cover the length of the tattoo, and it did, pretty much. But yeah, it's a slow-paced movie, and I don't recommend that if you're using that as a distraction from your tattoo. you mentioned the story in France. There's a French tattoo artist who lost his arm in an accident, and he outfitted a prosthetic with a tattoo gun. And there's a video of him doing it. If you wouldn't tell, it just kind of looks like he's got an arm in, like, a metal sleeve with a tattoo gun at the end of it. But I don't know. What are kind of concerns about that, or would there be any?
I was going to say, I think everybody's initial concern is, like, cleanliness. Yeah. I can't imagine him taking off, like, this entire, like, robot prosthetic arm tattoo machine to, like, clean it all down.
Shoving
in between
it in
tattoos.
The
autoclave. Yeah. Let me just autoclave this arm in between tattoos. Good for him, man. I mean, some bad things have happened to people, you know, and they've, like, overcome those tragic things, and I think it's great that he has, like, an opportunity for reminiscing to, like, do tattoos, but, I mean, do I think it's something practical? No. I don't think so.
Yeah. And, I mean, it was 22 years ago that he lost his arm, so you figure he's been at it for a while.
Are there pictures of the tattoos he did with the robot arm?
There's
healed.
Not healed. I mean, there's one he's doing on a guy's calf that looks pretty good from about 4 or 5 feet away, but
no portfolio pics. I mean, like, you can go check out that robot and that cyborg's portfolio, but I've got mine right here.
Yeah, it's a pretty gnarly looking video. But
speaking of portfolios, I have a good question for Stacy.
Mm-hmm.
So Stacy does a lot of amazing tattoos, but she does a lot of Kewpie tattoos. Where did the Kewpies begin? Because, I mean, you've had to have done hundreds?
I don't
hundreds
even know.
Hundreds of Kewpies? Amazing Kewpies. Like, I don't even know how you come up with all the ideas of translating all these characters.
I don't. It's the people.
Mean,
the people.
They come up with they come up with a general idea, but you still have to, like, you still have to make this Kewpie take on these characters. I mean,
it has to be believable.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess.
What is do you mean like this? What do you mean by Kewpie tattoo?
A Kewpie doll. Do you know what those are?
Oh, okay. So okay. I'm looking at your Instagram right now. So I'm okay. I see.
To help you.
All right, I'm with you.
Like,
okay.
What were the ones that you were working on when we did the
Chicago?
Was it Chicago? Or was it the Philly? The Philly convention. Didn't you do an
Philly
Edward
convention,
Scissorhands?
I did Edward Scissorhands. I did a Marilyn Manson one.
You did, like, a Danzig or a Misfit one?
Danzig was Chicago.
I mean, you're taking this, like, very generic character and turning them into these people.
It's perfect. Well, yeah. I very rarely have to change, like, the actual, I guess, physical attributes of the Kewpie, like, the basic base of it, but it's really easy, like, I don't know, just stick accessories on it and put it in a sassy little pose.
Oh, I remember you showed me this.
You did it,
the alien
yeah, one.
That was
like,
fun.
That's a good one. Like, I mean, it's fun. Kind of a costume, yeah, but it's still like recognizable as a QP and yeah, as an alien.
Well, the ones with the helmets and like,
and we're not talking like UFO difficult alien, like alien,
alien from
like
aliens.
The Xenomorph. Yeah,
there we go.
Yeah. I get extra nerdier after I do the research for doing most of them.
Isn't it fun how much stuff you can learn while you're doing tattoos from people?
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, I know what a bunch of different weird flowers are. Like, I would never have known that in my life or cared, but I do now.
You're like, oh, forget-me-nots. I know exactly what those look
like. Yeah, like a human database. It's so much fun. Like a pictorial database, but still.
You have those clients come in, they start trying to tell you something, and you're like this. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh my God.
Magic.
You totally just knew exactly what I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of one of the things, like, watching all of Ink Master, I learned a lot, but, like, there was things that I, like, really basic things I didn't know what filigree was. But, like, I knew sort of, and I maybe would describe it as, like, just squiggly flowery stuff, and if it would have said filigree, I wouldn't know what you were talking about. But, yeah, that's, like, stuff like that I've kind of learned and have made me sort of formulate my ideas better, I think.
Yeah.
Of course. Absolutely.
See, definitely verbal communication and bringing in imagery for, like, tattoo consultations, like, helps out a lot, because sometimes the words that I use and the words they use...
Totally different. Mm-hmm.
But if you can show me a picture and point what you like, I can see what you like very easily. If you can point out what you don't like, I can tell what you don't like.
I like when clients make their own sketches for me.
Do you?
Yeah, so I can at least see where their head's at, you know?
Do you feel bad, though, when they're like, sorry, this sketch is so bad, and you're like, no, it's good, and you're like, here, I'm gonna make it better.
No, I mean, I'm not making it better. They know exactly what their sketch looks like, and the best part, I want to make a book so bad, because I've kept so many. I have, like, such a crazy reference folder full of stuff, and it happens to have some of their sketches in it, and they are, I mean, they're great, and, like, you can show that, and then you can show the finished piece, and it's like, this is the journey.
Sometimes people bring in some phenomenal sketches.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, oh, I'm a terrible artist, and you're like, oh, you want to just draw the tattoo for me?
Sometimes I just like to see, because they'll say something to me, and I'll have a completely different image in my head, and then I'll actually see what they want, like, if they kind of sketch it out or draw it out, and I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, it clicks sometimes.
That's interesting. I've never thought about doing that. I always kind of find stuff that I like, and I sort of show it to Michael and be like, what do you think? But I've never really thought of sort of very awfully sketching it out and sort of being like, this is kind of what I'm thinking.
But on the flip side, like, recently you said you got an app, and you've, like, actually taken a picture of your arm and just, like, basically Photoshopped, like, an image that you found on the internet in a spot.
Yeah.
And you show it to me, and it's something that would work, but you're also, like, very open to me doing an interpretation of the tattoo.
Right.
Versus, like, being so set on, this is exactly the tattoo I want.
Yeah, totally. Like, I've learned that it's important to sort of let the artist have his own input, because he or she knows better what's going to look, you know, better where it's at, if it needs to be bigger, if it needs to be smaller. Like the first tattoo you ever did on me with this huge lion, I didn't want it as big, because I was worried about putting... And it was my first visible arm tattoo. And so I gave him a design, and you were like, I think it should be twice as big. And I was like, oh, shit. I don't know if I want to do it twice as big. But then you sketch it out, and it's like, it'll fit better, and it totally does. And so, stuff like that. I've learned to, like, trust the artist, because they know better, and they want to have pride in what they're doing.
Maybe that right there is, like, the key to getting a good tattoo, is not so much finding somebody that you like, which is good. You should definitely like the tattooer. Maybe not even finding somebody who's, like, work you love, because I think everybody can kind of do something a little bit different than what they do. But just finding somebody who, in general, like, you trust, like, you do like their work, and you don't feel like they're going to, like, do you wrong.
Yeah.
You know, like, just put a little faith in it, because I think I've said it numerous times, but if I go into a tattoo without any, like, restrictions, like, the person trusts me, the whole time all I can think about is, make this tattoo awesome. Mm-hmm. Make this tattoo badass. Like, crush this tattoo. Or, they tell me, I don't want this, I don't want this, I definitely want this, and please don't do that. And then the whole time I was thinking, don't fuck up. Don't do what they said.
Yeah.
Don't do it. Don't do it. You know, and I'm just stressed out the whole time versus just focusing on making a really good tattoo.
Yeah. So. This Jaws QP is amazing.
Thanks.
It's really cool.
Check out Stacey's QPs and get a regular sweet tattoo also.
Yes, please.
Yes. We'll give her another shout out at the end of the show, but it's at Instagram at Stacey Martin Tattoos, but we'll follow that up at the end. But yeah, it's... Yeah, so I've been distracted the last couple of minutes just looking at
it. And I got sidetracked too, so what was the first QP? Can you remember? I mean, I'm sure it may have just been a regular QP.
I think it was a regular QP, and I think it was... But I don't think it started the craziness, honestly.
Did you do the first weird one? Like, you drew up, like, a QP that was a cowgirl or something?
Well, no.
How fairly common the thing is that? Like, did you know what it was before you did the first one?
Oh, yeah. I had gotten one from Zach Nelligan, like a few years before. John and I got matching ones.
So let's talk about history of QPs, because you probably know better than I do, because I know they go back long before...
Like World War One.
Traditional tattooing.
Ish.
Okay.
Well...
Like weren't they like little doll characters and stuff before?
They were drawings before they were dolls, manufactured into dolls. It was Rose O'Neill was the illustrator that originally came up with them, and I believe she came up with them kind of as a morale booster during World War One, and so they kind of like just started to appear on everything, and a lot of them had their own little almost like Smurfs have their own like personalities, and
we had a grumpy QP.
Yeah, and there was like the little flagship one that's got the flag on its head, and the little soldier, and you know, children's books. Like she's an amazing illustrator. Like other than just the QPs, but those
see, I thought they were all like nude. But you're talking about like little soldier QPs.
There were like little mer QPs. There were all sorts of fun ones.
I kind of remember the mermaid ones.
Yeah, and then, you know, the Japanese kind of adopted, they loved cute things, right?
Yeah.
That's not a terrible thing to say. and started manufacturing the dolls, and I know there's a lot of porcelain dolls out there. I know Germans made a lot of the little porcelain QPs. They just kind of, like, had an evolution, and now, like, the ones that you see are the little, or big, rubber ones with the big, super-duper round eyes. That are super stiff, and I've done some of the QPs that look like that. Usually, if there's not a lot of movement involved needed in the QP, I'll do them almost like this stiff doll. But I like the Rose O'Neill illustrations because they're so crazy. Like they're always just jumping or running or like in crazy hysterical little dance poses and stuff, and like little pointed toes. And those lend better to doing some of the QPs. The more obscure ones that people ask for. Because I feel like they need to be in a specific... Like, the pose that you imagine that celebrity or whoever in, you know. Where the dolls need to be, like... I know people can't see me because it's the radio.
This is why you're good at doing these QPs.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I know I put... Sometimes I put too much thought into things, but I don't know. I really like doing them and researching them, so... And I think the first one that made things go crazy, the first few... At least, was, I know on my client, Brooke, she got the half, the anatomical one that had...
I just saw that one, that's really cool.
Yeah, the half, like, it's all candy for all of the entrails and innards and stuff, and
how long ago was this?
2 years ago?
Been doing QPs for 2 years.
And I think three years ago, I did a couple of them, but they were just the little naked ones, and I don't think it really took off. I think that's when everybody was like... Had a QP or two.
Didn't we do QuiltCon like 2 years ago?
The who?
Like almost QuiltCon. Yeah.
Was... Oh, maybe it's been longer than that.
I feel like it's been longer because you had that whole page of like little QPs on like sewing thread.
Yeah, the two little, the one little cranky one with the empty bobbin.
Oh, yeah.
You know. Yeah, there's been a lot of them. I tattooed, I think, one of the first ones on the owner of Sourbus. She came in from, I think, Philly and got one of her grandson holding balloons.
And that's the...
Flying away.
That's the company you do graphic design for?
Yeah.
Okay.
So there was that, but then I think the ones that really got things going were, like, the anatomical one and the little David Bowie one. The first David Bowie one.
The first.
The Labyrinth David Bowie.
Oh,
yeah. All right.
And
that one kind of got the ball rolling. So that one started, that one got featured on a bunch of the tattoo blogs and stuff, so.
Do you have any of your sourpuss on your Instagram, or?
I think it's sprinkled in there. I'll post, I'll usually post when they post my stuff, I'll throw it on there too, so.
Yeah, I'm seeing some of the ones that you mentioned, like I saw that David Bowie, I saw at least one David Bowie, one from Labyrinth, and yeah, they're adorable.
Thanks, man.
Crushing the cuties.
Yeah. Do you find mostly women get those, or do you find a lot of guys interested, really?
It's, yeah, I mean, the Alien one's on a dude, the King Diamond one's on a dude. Danzig one's on a dude.
Yeah.
Have you done an Elvis Presley QB?
I haven't. It's funny because I feel like I've done a lot of the more obscure ones, and I think, I don't know. I guess
somebody
the more popular ones. I haven't done any Star Wars ones, which is shocking to me.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool because it seems like a cool alternative to, like, I'd imagine it, like, if you wanted sort of like a Dia de los Muertos, like a beautiful woman, but maybe if you got a wife that would be opposed to, like, having a picture of a beautiful woman on your body sort of thing, like, it's a decent alternative to, like, you know, it's a woman, but it's cute, and it's something that I love. Like,
or if you don't want a portrait.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you don't want to commit to it, because portraits have to be real big, like,
yeah,
to be real decent, and, you know, and if you just want something that's like a token, you know, like a little souvenir of kind of one of your favorite things, I think it's perfect.
Man, I cannot believe you haven't done a Star Wars QB.
No, not at all.
Little Darth QB.
Not one.
Oh, man.
Not a one.
Yeah, and you're able to put a ton of details into some of these. Like, I look into Sweeney Todd. Like, that's really cool.
That was a fun one.
Yeah. I don't know if QBs would be my thing. But, I mean, they are really cool.
Never seen that.
JC, what would you get a QB of?
Man, I would have to... Maybe, you know what I'd probably get?
See?
Lloyd Dobler from Say Anything.
All right.
Oh,
with the stereo.
Oh, my God. That would be the best.
How has nobody got that yet?
I know.
You could be the first right there.
Oh, his poor fat little arms wouldn't be able to reach. Like, his little short, stubby arms. They'd be like T-Rex arms.
Would he still have a boombox? Would
need
we
help.
Modernize it? Give him, like, a little Bose dock with an iPhone?
Give him a little iPod. I don't know. There's so many possibilities.
Or maybe having both, pick both, but holding an iPhone, you still have both arms up in the air.
Yeah. It would be cute either way.
That would be cool, because I was trying to think of, like, my favorite movies when you asked me that on the spot, and I was like, well, Say Anything is one of my all-time favorite movies. Fight Club. Tyler Durden.
Perfect.
Would make a pretty interesting QB.
See, I was thinking Hot Rod.
Oh,
okay.
My God.
Get
See?
A little Hot Rod QB.
Perfect.
Now you can get the whole gang. Just all of them tattooed.
I wanted to do, like, and hopefully I'll get to do them eventually, I wanted to do the entire cast of the Big Lebowski as
QBs.
There
you go.
Like, even the dancers with all the, with the bowling pin headdresses and stuff. How cool would that be?
That would be cool.
It'd be sweet. I'm doing, I don't know if you've ever heard of the comic book, Copra? I think it's kind of, like, super duper underground indie, but I'm doing their whole gang of superheroes as QBs on a dude's leg.
Nice.
Coming up.
Cool.
So that's happening. I like doing the obscure ones, man.
Yeah.
Besides, what are some of the kinds of tattoos you like doing besides those?
Just illustrative. I like really bizarre, weird, kind of psychedelic looking takes on stuff, and I don't know. I've done some, like, weird ones that people have asked me to do. I like, you know, the, what's her name? The Bride of Frankenstein wearing the flamingo sunglasses. Like, I love stuff like that. Like, just goofy.
Is that one on the Instagram?
Yeah. And then there's, like, this weird little pink demon that's, you know, holding a tropical drink and wearing a little visor, like, not having fun on vacation. Like, that's just so dumb and silly and fun and colorful.
There's a skull with a crown on it that stands out from the rest because it's so different from everything, but it's really good.
That's the Lich King.
Yeah.
That's the Dungeons & Dragons start of that sleeve, so. I saw that heel today, and it looks fantastic. And then,
yeah, that one is a good. That's a really good one.
It's a fun one, and yeah, I like kind of doing everything with, you know, but I mean, I guess
dog portraits.
The style comes through, like through. I don't know. Does it look like I do too many things?
No, I mean, I think in general, it looks like you do like a really solid, either simplified traditional or a little bit more illustrated traditional, and you can do color, black and gray. But then the cubies, I feel like, stand out a little bit because I feel like they have like a really basic traditional feel to them, but they are very detailed.
Yeah, they get a little wild.
Yeah. But I mean, that's fun. It's probably stressful / fun that you can try to work as much into a tattoo as possible. And I totally forgot about this.
Like that Mr. T QP, wow.
He was one of my favorites.
There's a ton of detail in that.
I'm loving Jim Carrey right now in the pink tutu. I totally forgot about this one. That's a good one. Oh, and that's on Abel.
Yep.
Oh. Very nice.
And his girl got the Amy Winehouse one, which was the one tattoo on my Instagram that I felt put a ding in the internet the day I posted it.
That's a good one.
I do like how you frame these with the real life
real
inspiration
versions.
Next to them. Yeah, that's really cool.
Thanks. Yeah, the Mork from Ork one was one of my favorites. I think I just like all of them for the most part.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Nice Cthulhu?
Yeah, that's exactly the one I was just looking at. That's crazy.
It's a lot of...
We're like on the same page on my phone and your computer.
That's funny. So who's running the show now?
I'm too busy liking pictures right now. Yeah. I'm seeing all the ones that I missed before.
Cool. Yeah, so let's kind of back to the show a little bit. Well... Do you go to very many film festivals? Are you into film, sort of?
I don't know. I mean, I like movies. I don't know if I'm as into film as Michael is.
Yeah.
That's
one of the ways that, in addition to sort of just seeing that getting along because of our interest in tattoos, like, he's really into film, and that's sort of how we met, is
nice.
One of my friends who's into film also introduced me to him, and that's kind of where we met from there. And yeah, anytime I'm getting tattooed by him, we're always talking about movies and stuff throughout.
If you wanna get tattooed and talk about movies, come and see me.
Yeah.
All I know how to talk about.
So one of the things we're doing later this month, we'll try to record an episode from there. And I think it'll help with my press requirements for it. There's a festival called Fantastic Fest coming up in September, held at the Alamo Drafthouse, South Lamar Theater. Every year, it's the largest genre festival. Every year, it gets bigger and bigger, and this year seems to be one of the biggest. They're going to premiere Tim Burton's Miss Peregrine's and the Peculiar Thing, Home for Peculiar Children.
That looks good. That looks good.
Tim Burton's going to be there for your Q&A, and then he's going to record. And
Tim Burton's going to be there.
What?
Yeah.
Tim Burton's going to be there. And Bruce Campbell.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, this year, like, all the guests, Bruce Campbell, Dolph Lundgren.
Can't wait to see Dolph.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring my boxing gloves.
I mean, I'm bummed out that Keanu Reeves isn't here this year that we know of.
Right.
But, hey.
Because
they
have been making John Wick 2 for a while.
God, I was so excited. I thought we were going to see John Wick 2.
Yeah. But what are some of the things coming up that you're excited about that you just can't wait to see or...
You know, honestly, like, I've been, like, pretty busy, so I've kind of fell behind on, like, a lot of these. And typically, I try to just go into Fantastic Fest blind. You know, I look at, like, the movies that are coming out, and if there's something in particular that I want to see, like, say, numerous people told me I need to see Wolf Cop. I've seen it has good reviews. Everybody says it's amazing. Been meaning to watch it. This year, Fantastic Fest, they're going to have the sequel to it, another Wolf Cop. So, time to catch up. I need to watch that one so I can be prepared for it. What else did I see that was on there? I know that Bruce Campbell's going to be there and bring some of Ash vs. the Evil Dead Season 2. That should be good. I mean, the first season was really fun.
Yeah. Dolph Lundgren's there with a movie called Don't Kill It, which is described as... An ancient demon is unleashed in a Mississippi town where the only people who can stop it are FBI agent Evelyn Pierce and grizzled cynical demon hunter Jebediah Woodley.
Oh, Jebediah.
Who I imagine is Dolph Lundgren. The directors...
Who is the director? Because I remember that being something... Like, they made a movie, maybe...
Oh, Mike Mendez?
The name sounds familiar.
Mike Mendez of... Look at my IMDb real quick.
God, I need, like, the listing. Maybe I'll just, like, look up Fantastic Fest real fast.
Tales of Halloween?
Man, maybe that wasn't it. I don't know if I've seen that movie. Maybe I just saw Dolph and I was like, I've got to see that movie.
Tales of Halloween, Lavalantula, oh, Big Ass Spider. That's what it is.
You know, I didn't see Big Ass Spider. That's the one with the guy from Heroes, right?
Yes.
Okay.
At
least I know what it is.
Masters of Horror, The Convent, Killers, Monsterland, Chillerama.
Chillerama?
Yeah.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever seen Chillerama? Wow. It is something interesting.
I think the last movie that John and I went to go see was Swiss Army Man.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, that was good.
That was ridiculous.
It's one of my favorite movies of the year.
Yeah?
We didn't know what to expect. I mean, but like just walking like into the theater, we passed the poster and I just started laughing. And that was pretty much it for the entire movie. Like we laughed the entire time.
That makes me feel good.
I'm really glad that I had no idea what kind of movie it was going to be.
Oh, so you hadn't seen any of the trailers either?
No, I saw the trailers. Oh, okay. I just didn't really understand where it was going to end up going.
Yeah.
Or, like, you know, or what kind of tone it was going to have, really. But it was pretty great. I liked it a lot.
I'm glad you say you laughed a lot, because, like, my wife and I, we went to the Violet Crown, which is kind of like a nicer theater.
Mm-hmm.
And we went... Exactly. So we go in there, you know, and we're sitting there, and the movie starts, and as many of you saw in the trailer, there's a lot of farting. And I think at first, like, the first fart, it was a very, like, long, drawn-out one, and everybody kind of, like, laughed a little bit. We laughed really hard and loud. Everybody else was, like, giggling a little bit. And then it just proceeded to be fart after fart after fart, and when everybody else is, like, laughing kind of died out, my wife and I were still laughing a lot. And I'm like, oh my god, these people are going to be like, please get these people out of the theater. Why are they laughing so much?
I swear to god, if they were that over it, they should have just left.
Like, maybe they still thought it was funny, but I mean, I grew up like watching Beavis and Butthead, so fart jokes, I just I can't help it. Like, it's funny.
The word fart makes me laugh.
Yeah.
You just said it, I had to stop.
So I have a good one for everybody.
Alright.
Have you guys seen Bat Kid Begins?
No, actually, yeah. I saw that you saw that the other day.
You posted that, didn't you?
I did.
That's where I saw the poster. Okay.
Man.
Yeah.
My eyes were like Niagara Falls through the whole movie. Like, it... And it's like not a movie I think everybody's going to be affected that way, but like... It's the story of this kid. He's super young. He has leukemia. He goes through like all this like... horrible stuff, like having to do like all this treatment, and Make-A-Wish Foundation contacts them and tries to like get something set up, and basically his wish is to be Batman. I'm already like getting like teary thinking about this.
It's kind of great.
So he ends up like in remission, you know, leukemia's fine, and they start trying to plan this Batman thing out, and then it just explodes and starts getting bigger and bigger, and basically the entire city of San Francisco pretty much shut down for a day. Thousands and thousands of people came out, you know, hundreds of thousands of people were like involved in making it all happen, and just watching it unfold, you know, it was just really, really inspiring to see how good people could be.
Yes.
Like, all these people genuinely like worked so hard to make this like one day special for this kid, like extra special. And I love the movie. I think it was great.
Yeah, I remember when it happened, and I think sort of everybody kind of experienced it the same way, where, like, this would be a great movie. I guess nobody figured that there was a documentary following the kid at the time. But, yeah, just reading about it, and, like, my mom's a cancer survivor, and so, like, anytime I read stories about that, like, it's very emotional, and it's a great... I can't wait to see that. You said it's on Netflix?
Yeah. I remember seeing that it was coming out, and I saw it the other night and started up pretty late and watched it all. It was wonderful.
Yeah. I caution myself with stuff like that, though, because I tend to, unless I'm at home by myself, I tend to, like, not want to become a blubbering mess. But, I mean, that's just me.
Yeah, watch that one at home by yourself then.
Private movies.
Yeah. That and the documentary about Roger Ebert.
Oh, yeah.
That one
is, I've heard that's great.
That one is a good one, too. Floodgates.
Oh, gosh.
Wife's like, do you want me to turn this off?
No,
it's fine.
Keep going.
Yeah.
I'll be fine.
There are times where I realize I'm the most, like, out of touch with my emotions, or, like, because the weirdest things trigger me. Like, one of my favorite basketball players of all time was inducted into the Hall of Fame this week. And when you're inducted in the Hall of Fame, you get to go up there and you get to give a speech. And, like, he's been through a lot of stuff throughout his whole life. And so, like, I still haven't listened to it because I listened to the first 4 minutes and I was, like, bawling. And I was telling my friends and they were like, it's a basketball player, right? I'm like, it means a lot
weird
to me.
Like, certain things will trigger you. And,
yeah.
And that kid did it for me.
And it's like, and it's like movies don't typically make me cry, but, like, the movie Rudy does.
Oh, man. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind every time.
Yeah. Cool. Well, on that note,
wait. Oh. What makes Stacy cry?
Marching bands.
Marching bands?
Marching bands?
Really? The second they start up. Yeah,
man.
Big time.
Itchy.
Like, depending on the type of movie?
It could be in a parade. It could be during the halftime show if, like, you know, Beyonce decides to have a marching band come out in the middle of a song. Like, I'm toast.
And you hear that drum line and it's just...
It just gets you, man. It's like, yeah.
When you get a chance, Google Ohio State Marching Band Jurassic Park.
Okay.
Yeah.
They've
done it with a whole bunch of movies, but they started with Jurassic Park, where they're basically in formation, recreate the Tyrannosaurus chasing the Jeep. Like, it's really cool.
I love it already.
Yeah. And they, with the music, of course, obviously.
Awesome.
Yeah. Cool. All right, well, on that note, we'll go ahead and end this episode of the Tattoo Shop podcast. As always, you can follow me on Instagram at jcdeleon1. You can follow the show on Instagram at Tattoo Shop Pod. That's 2 P's, Tattoo Shop Pod, all together. Michael on Instagram at Bearded Gentleman.
Yes. Man, not men.
Man, yeah. And I always overemphasize that because Bearded Gentleman is a completely other.
Do not send me DMs of your beard.
Yeah. And Stacy on Instagram, you are?
Stacy Martin Tattoos.
Cool. And people can find you at?
Golden Age Tattoo.
Awesome. And what's your, I guess, are you kind of booked all the time or what's?
We won't get into that. They can email me if they want.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. So your contact info is on there.
Right on the website. Yeah, but they can figure it out.
Cool. You guys know anything coming up? Any conventions or any?
I'm about to embark on my second guest spot of the year in New York City at Three Kings Tattoo in 2 weeks.
Ooh, nice. Three Kings.
So there's that. Mm-hmm. I'm excited.
Cool.
You doing the one in Manhattan or the one?
Manhattan, East Village.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know Dave?
No, I know Peggy.
I think Dave also works there.
Okay, I'll have to double check. Yeah, it's going to be good.
Cool.
Me and Stacey will do some more conventions together.
Yes, please.
We'll talk about that.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm hoping when the Austin one comes around, maybe we can set up something where we can record something around then. Or actually, you're kind of probably busy all day, but I don't know. We can figure something out.
Hey, if you're a tattooer and you're coming into town for the Austin Tattoo Convention, let's do a podcast.
Awesome. Cool. Well, until next time, we have the Tattoo Shop Podcast, and we'll see you later.